This is HPR episode 2607 entitled Processing and is part of the series Programming 101. It is hosted by Klaatu and is about 30 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is Klaatu introduces processing, a Java subset, and IDE suitable for graphical programming projects.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hi everybody, you're listening to Hacker Public Radio. My name is Klaatu. In this episode, I'm going to talk about processing. Okay, I admit it. The only reason I thought to do this particular episode is because I went to the hackerpublicradio.org upload site, which is hackerpublicradio.org/calendar.php, and I noticed that when shows had been submitted but not yet, I guess, resolved, it comes up with a message that says, processing. We are currently processing this show. And I thought it would be hilarious if I did a show named Processing, because then the show would still show up after the upload, but before it had been processed. Pretty clever, right? I mean, that's the hack for this episode. You're welcome. Okay, so now for the actual episode about a programming language called processing. I don't know if you've heard of this or not. A lot of people don't seem to know about this, and I got introduced to it through a friend who does a lot of STEAM-based education. So STEAM not being the gaming platform, but science, technology, engineering, art, and something else. Anyway, this is a popular little language in that community, I guess, because it's a visual feeling language, meaning that it is not a visual programming language like the way that, for instance, Scratch from MIT would be, or I don't know, like visual basic code blocks or something. Like, I don't know, I've heard about things where you just drag and drop little boxes and then you define what the box is, maybe, and so on. It's not like that at all. It's actually a subset of Java, and you program it by typing in text. But it is almost instantly launchable. You press a little play button and it launches on a screen, and you can see exactly what you've done and where you are in your program and what's not working. So it has the feel of kind of an instant feedback kind of programming environment, but it's very traditional, and it's a great intro to Java. Now, you may or may not need to teach Java in whatever your path is. Like, if you are a teacher listening to this, you might hear this and think, well, I'm trying to teach Python because that's what everyone told me was really good when I first started looking into this stuff. So processing may not exactly fit into your lesson plan, and that's okay. I've in my experience, I've noticed that education for programming at this point, at least, it kind of seems to be, I mean, you know, at the beginning stages, it seems to kind of be split between those who teach Python and those who teach Java. And I am not saying that they can't be mixed together. I am saying that you might choose to not mix them and just stay with one thing. And certainly there's an argument to sort of sticking with one logical path. Well, I started teaching Python, they were doing scripting, or they're doing a Pygame thing, and now I want to take it further, so I want to get them to do GUI things, and so I'll take them to PyCute next, and so on. And that's a perfectly logical path. And the same thing for Java, you know, you might start them out doing little command line things, and then take them into processing, and then show them a proper GUI framework, and so on. So I can imagine those being very separate. Now, you can also kind of imagine it being, hey, this is just a taste of lots of different programming stuff, and here's Python. Okay, now you're used to that. Switcheroo. Here's something based on Java, and now you'll be used to that. And so you're getting a little smattering of both. Maybe you're not specializing in one or the other, but now you have a pretty good foundation of what's out there. So there are arguments for both, and that's fine. But I did want to talk about processing because it is a cool little programming environment. It's easy to get started with, and it has one huge advantage, which is it can very trivially export the programs that students or you create in processing to an Android phone. It's a one-click export, but there is some setup to get that export to work because you have to install Android development kits and stuff like that. So it's not right out of the box one click, but once you have it set up properly, it is a one-click export. You get an APK. You can just drag that over to your phone, and then on your phone, install that, and it pops up with full, you know, just exactly what you would expect out of an Android app. It's really, really neat. It gets students really excited to be able to see their little painting app, for instance, suddenly on their mobile. It's really exciting. Okay, so let's talk about the meat and potatoes here. So processing can be found at processing.org. If you go to processing.org, the front page of their site has a little intro video to kind of get you excited and show you what is possible with processing, which is kind of silly because presumably anything is possible with most programming languages, and indeed that turns out to be the case here. So I'd skip all that and just go straight to download processing. Once you've downloaded processing, well, okay, so on the downloading page, you'll see the different deliverables. You'll see the Windows, the Linux, and the macOS. I'm going to assume for this episode that you're running processing on Linux, because first of all, why wouldn't you? Linux is a great platform for teaching, because this way you're teaching kids how to actually understand what their computer is doing, rather than trying to unravel what some mysterious corporation in the west coast of the USA is doing. So Linux is a great platform for teaching, and it's a great platform for programming, so it's really kind of, I think there's an argument that it does a pretty good service to people to introduce them to Linux whilst introducing them also to in this case, Java. So I'm going to download the Linux 64-bit version, and that gives you a processing dash today 3.3.7. When you hear this episode, it might be something else. So let's just say xyz-linux64.tgz. It goes to my download folder. If I go to my download folder and just filter out everything but processing, here it is, then I can right-click on that, extract here, and that provides me with a folder called processing-xyz. In that folder, there's a bunch of stuff. It's kind of difficult at first to tell one thing from the other or know what to click. So there's an install.sh. That, as you might expect, installs this onto your system. Now, you can do that, but if you just want to try this before you buy, not literally buy, although you can pay for processing, you can make a donation, it's a nonprofit. Then you can just click processing, just the file called processing. And what that file will look like will depend on your system. It's actually a shell script that sets some fancy environment variables and makes sure that processing knows where to look for all of its little libraries and things like that. But you can click on that, and that ought to just launch right away. Now, if it doesn't for some reason, then you can open up a terminal to cut to the chase. I mean, there are a dozen different ways to do this in a GUI, but since I don't know what GUI you're running, I won't bother with trying to guess what that would be. I mean, I guess I could try to guess. So you could right-click on it, you could get like get properties or info or whatever your file manager says. Look for a permissions tab, make sure that the file is executable, say okay to that, and now click it, and it should run. If that doesn't work, then you can go into a terminal, cd into your downloads folder, and then do a chmod plus x into processing-xyz/processing. And now it's executable, and you can click on it again, and it should launch. So what exactly launches? Well, it's a little IDE, an integrated development environment, and it may look similar, or familiar to you, rather, if you have ever used the Arduino, and a lot of people have, so this may well look quite familiar to you. It's basically the same IDE that the Arduino uses. I'm not sure, honestly, whose IDE this is, and which of processing or Arduino kind of ripped it off the other, and I say ripped off in a friendly manner, but that's what it is. So if you've ever used an Arduino, then this will look pretty familiar to you, and it's even called a sketch, just like on the Arduino. So all your programs are sketches. I think that's what they call it on the Arduino. Now I'm wondering if I'm just getting things confused, but anyway, it's the same IDE. So let's create really quick a little basic application. And don't worry, it's not going to be boring like Hello World. We're going to do a painting app in 12 lines of code. So if you type void space setup parentheses parentheses, that's open and close parentheses, and then an open curly brace. And then on the next line, if you want, you can type in the word size and then open, that's size, and then parentheses, and then some reasonable screen size. So let's do, I don't really know, honestly, what mobile phones lately, we're not going to export this to a mobile phone, but I like to plan as if though we were going to. Let's just call it a 720 by 480. So 720 comma 480, close parentheses, and then a semicolon. And you have to put the semicolon on there or things will break. That's the hardest thing to remember about, I think, in Java. And then close bracket, okay? So you've just, this is a subset of Java. So you're not really writing a complete Java program here. you're being given a lot of things that just inherently get inserted at the beginning and the end of your code that you don't have to worry about. And that's okay. That's a benefit. So, but don't go away from this episode thinking, hey, I've learned Java. This is great. No, this is a specific implementation within Java called processing. So the specific implementation here is this convention that the first function of your program is the setup function. And that's called, it's void and then setup. Why void? That's weird. Void because we're not creating this function to be copyable or to get information out of. We are simply, we're creating this function, void setup, just to exist. It's going to run once, and then it's going to continue down the line of code, and it will never run setup again. It's just, it gets run once, it happens, the thing that it does is done, and then we're finished with it. That's what that means. If there was something else, if there was something more substantial out of our little function here, we would call it not void, but maybe string if we were creating a word, or an int if we were creating an integer. And that's kind of advanced stuff that you don't really need to know in processing to get a lot done, so I'm not going to go into it. Okay, so that's the first code block right there, three lines of code, and as you might imagine from just kind of context here, that creates a window. And in fact, if you hit the play button in the upper, or it's called the run button apparently, but it looks like a play button, up in the upper left corner of your IDE, you get a screen that is exactly, you guessed it, 720 pixels wide by 480 tall. And you can even swap those numbers if you like. So I'm going to do that right now. 480, 720. And this is the advantage of, and then hit the run button again, and we've created a new window that is taller than it is wide. And this is one of the advantages of processing, is that you can make changes and then press play and see exactly what you've done. It's very handy if you're the type of programming learner or programmer who needs to understand what all those little switches and functions and arguments do. Like, why are they there? Why is it two numbers separated by a comma and not just two numbers separated by an X or whatever? Like, what do those numbers mean? What do those words mean? Well, you can figure that out almost on your own just by making a change and then clicking run. Okay, so that's a pretty boring application right now. I mean, it's exciting because we've made a window, but it's not terribly exciting. So size obviously is a built-in processing keyword that sort of means, hey, make a window of this size. So that's good to know. And it's something that you use in setup, and that's what we've done. So now we're going to make a new one, and we're going to call it void draw. Now this is, these are not arbitrary. None of this is arbitrary. So setup is a specific function that processing expects to see. So for instance, if we renamed void setup to foo, void foo, and then we ran processing, something would happen, but not what you expect. So if I just pressed run right now, and a little tiny box, not tiny, but a smallish box that doesn't seem terribly interactive pops up on the screen, because that's the default behavior of processing, but it didn't set the size. It didn't do the 480 by 720 size setting, and that's because processing expects to see a void setup function. So it also expects to see a draw function, and the draw function is so that processing knows what to draw on screen, and we can do a couple of different things with that. So let's just do something really simple first. We'll do a void draw parentheses parentheses, and then open the curly bracket, and let's do this. This is a special processing built-in function, and don't worry, I'm going to tell you where to find all the processing built-in functions in a moment, or a little bit, because it's useless for me to just tell you the function and you never, and you the only two functions you'll ever know that exist are size and rect. Well, I just spoiled it for you. So there's one called rect, R-E-C-T. It's like rectangle, but no, programmers don't like to type, which is funny because that's all they do. But so it's just rect, R-E-C-T. And then of course processing needs to know what kind of rectangle you want to draw. Like, are we talking about a square? Are we talking about a rectangle? Where on our little screen that we've created, which is 480 by 720, where in that area is it supposed to draw that this shape that we're asking it to draw? Okay, so those are called arguments. When you invoke a keyword, a special function within processing, and then have to give it those numbers separated by commas, or sometimes they're words or whatever, those are called arguments. So when we said size 480, 720, we are saying size with the arguments of 480 by 720. And processing just knows, because processing has been programmed to know, that the first number in size is the x-axis, meaning the one that goes across, and the next one is the y-axis, meaning the one that goes up and down. And that's why when we switched 720 with 480, the window essentially rotated clockwise. So for rect, I happen to know that the arguments that processing wants, that the minimum that it requires, I should say, is the x and the y position where the rectangle should start being drawn. So where should we start drawing the rectangle? And then, as you might guess, the next argument is x and y arguments. So how far to the right should we draw our rectangle? And then how far down should the rectangle go? So let's try, and that's just the bare minimum. That's what the rect function in processing absolutely requires. It needs to know at least where you want to start, and then how far down, and how far to the right, and how far down. So knowing that, you can do, let's say, rect parentheses 10 comma 10 comma 80 comma 80, and then you close your parentheses, of course, and then what do you put at the end of every sentence in Java? A semicolon, yes. And now, remember, we still have this curly brace that we started up here on the void draw, so we'll close the curly brace. Perfect. And now we'll press play, or run, whatever it is. And hey, now we've got our window, which is 480 by 720, and just shy of the upper left corner, just 10 pixels away from being on the edge, there's a white rectangle that is exactly 80 pixels across and 80 pixels high. You could even verify that. If you're using KDE as your desktop environment, you can get a screen ruler and measure. Yep, it is exactly 80 pixels. So we know it's called K ruler. It's a ruler that appears on your screen. You can measure things. So yeah, there we go. We've just created a rectangle that is 10 away from, 10 padding, I would say, in CSS terms, if you know that. And then by 80 by 80. Okay, so I wonder what other arguments rect can take. I mean, is it just the position of the rectangle? Well, you can find that sort of thing out by looking at the documentation. It's not scary documentation, but it takes an eye for it. But I'll tell you where it is. It's processing.org/reference. Pretty simple. And then if you do a search or a find on that page, you'll find rect parentheses parentheses, and that appears in this subsetting, or this subheading called TD primitives. So I'm going to click on the rect parentheses parentheses, and it displays a bunch of different options for us. So for instance, it gives us some examples of what we might produce with a rect. So here's, and it even shows you a picture of what the results are. So it's rect 30, 20, 55, 55, shows you a square, a little bit offset from the top left. And then there's an interesting variation on this where you have another number on the end. So 30, 20, 55, 55, 7. Turns out that 7 is the radius of the corners. Now, if you just put 1, 7 there, it assumes all corners are rounded by 7 pixels. That's, again, very CSS-like, if you're familiar with that. If you put more numbers, so 30, 20, 55, 55, or in our case, 10, 10, 80, 80, and then put, for instance, 3, 6, 12, 18, then each corner from top left, right, left, bottom, sorry, top left, top right, bottom left, so sort of follow the compass around, or the clock, if you will, is progressively rounder. So that seems to be all that we can do with this rectangle, but surely this fancy graphical programming environment can do more than that. Well, it turns out there is, and you could find this out by kind of browsing their tutorials and looking through the reference document, really. You would probably eventually find this on your own. But there's a function called fill, F-I-L-L, just like a paint program, like in GIMP or MT Paint. Fill, if you invoke fill before you invoke rectangle, and this is what the fill document says, it tells me this, if I click on the fill parentheses parentheses in reference, it shows me an example of how to use fill, and it says that if I use fill in front of a rectangle, or any shape probably, then when we draw the rectangle, it will be filled with whatever we've set fill to. So in other words, we can can draw, we can say in our void draw, at the top of void draw, we'll put fill, parentheses, 0, 255, 0, close parentheses, and then what do you put at the end of every sentence in Java? A semicolon. Now, 0, 255, 0, of course, is RGB values, so we should get a very, very sort of green screen green rectangle if we click the run button, and sure enough, we do. We have a rectangle that is green there. Perfect. Okay, so what do you think would happen if we do fill 255, 0, 0, parentheses, semicolon, and then rect again, and instead of doing it at 10, 10, let's do it, I don't know, at 20, 20 for, let's just mix it up a bit, 120, 120. So we're making, and comma 7. Just to get a rounded rectangle. And then what do we put at the end of the Java sentence? Semicolon. So I've got fill rect and then fill rect. I press run and there you go. Yeah, we've got a green rectangle in the background and we've got a rounded red rectangle in the foreground, slightly larger than the green one. Okay, so we could do that all day, but that would get kind of boring, to be honest. So what we're going to do instead, I'm going to just clear out my void draw completely. And now I'm going to type in some new fancier code. And this is going to probably, I hope, blow your mind. So with an empty void draw, what we'll do is we'll do an if statement. So I'm going to type in if, and then parentheses, mouse pressed. And that is mouse pressed with a capital P, so it's camel case. And then close parentheses, and then open a curly bracket. Now let's do a fill. And we know how to do that. So you can pick a color, really, any color. I'll just do 10... comma 120, comma 90. So a little bit of a bluish green. And semicolon after that line. And then you can close the curly brace. And then do an else statement. So just the word else. And then another open curly bracket. And then fill. We'll do some other color. So we'll do maybe we'll reverse that. So 120, comma 1. Oh, well, 90. Okay, I'm not reversing it. And then 20. Close parentheses, close semicolon. Semicolon. And then close curly bracket. And then we'll do a rect, parentheses, mouse X with a capital X, comma, mouse Y with a capital Y, comma, let's do maybe 50, comma, 50. So what we're doing, you might be catching on, close parentheses, and then semicolon, and then close curly bracket. So what we're doing is we're saying we want to set the fill color to some color, depending on whether the mouse is pressed. So if the mouse is pressed, if the mouse button is pressed down, it will draw, it, or the fill will be set to 10, 120, 90. If not, so else, the fill is set to 120, 90, 20, whatever colors those end up being. We'll find out soon. And either way, as long as draw is being run, it's going to draw a rectangle wherever our mouse is on the X axis and wherever our mouse is on the Y axis. And the size of the rectangle is going to be 50, 50. Now, if I hit play, you'll see that while I run the mouse over the screen, I get a really ugly brown color. I am so sorry for choosing that. But if I click the mouse, then I have a really nice kind of, I don't know, is that teal? It's like green, but not exactly green. So whatever color that is. And so we've made a paint application in literally 12 lines. Now, it's not a very, very fancy paint application, I admit, but it's a very visual and responsive result to very little code. And as you can imagine, it's very easy from this point to go in and, okay, well, maybe that initial color, that ugly, horribly ugly brown color is not that great. So maybe we'll switch that up a bit from 120. We'll get rid of most of the red. So I'll make that 8. I'll make the green maybe a little bit less. So we'll just turn it more blue and we'll give it like 200 in the blue. So 8, 8, 200. Press play. See what that gets you. Oh yeah, that's a nice blue. And then you click and you get a nice green. So that's a lot better. I guess we could try for something complementary. So if we could try to get a purple in there. Yep, there we go. So up the red to 120, keep the green at 8, and then put the blue at 200, you get a purple and then a green, so we got a little bit of a Joker motif going on, and that's quite nice. Green and purple are on the opposite ends of the color wheel, so those sorts of colors tend to go well together. They're complementary colors, I guess. So that works. And you can do more. You can do more stuff. Now, we're not going to go too far down the road now. I mean, that was the demo. You just heard the demo that we're done. But one really fun thing to throw into the mix is a little bit of randomness. And random, again, if you go to the documentation at processing.org/reference, you can look up random, and there's a whole subheading for random functions. There are 6 different ones. We'll just go to random, parentheses, parentheses. And the random function, you can invoke it in 2 different ways. One is just with one number. So so random, some high, the upper value, so the maximum value. It assumes, if you just give it one number, it assumes that low is zero. And so whatever number you're giving it is as high as it will go. And then random low high, you can do like 0 to 255, so that you're explicitly saying, okay, you go as low as this and as high as that. Or you could say, okay, low, we never want to go all the way down to zero, so we'll keep it at like 10 at the low. And we never want to go to 255, because that's just all on, that's bad, so we'll go to 220 as the highest, or whatever you want to do. So knowing that function, we can swap all kinds of things out with a random integer. So if we go, for instance, into rect mouse x mouse y, 50-50 is what we had it set to before. So what if we said instead, comma, so now we've got rect parentheses mouse x comma mouse y comma random, and then parentheses parentheses, and inside that parentheses let's put, we never want to go below, let's say 10, and we never want to go bigger than 80, and we'll do the same thing for the other 50, but maybe we'll use different, more, some different numbers. So let's say that one will never go lower than 15 and no higher than, well, I guess, well, 80 is fine. Now if we hit play, now you're starting to paint with this weird and wacky multi-shaped square that keeps resizing itself every frame, every time that the clock ticks over and run is set and it draws a new rectangle, it draws a different size. So you're probably already thinking, oh, wait a minute, that means I could probably do that with the color values as well. And yes, you can. So fill random, let's do it 10 comma 120. And then instead of that 8 in the middle, we'll do random, let's do 10 up to 80. I'm just randomly choosing limits here. I mean, you could just say random 255, and that would make your little, your color choice go from 0 all the way up to 255. So I'll press go here, and yep, now we've got all kinds of colors being drawn, you know, all different kinds of shapes. And then if I press, I didn't put any random there, so that just becomes completely green. So there you go. That's an always-on kind of paint application. And maybe you can already think of how you might be able to make it not always on. For instance, what if you took that rect statement at the bottom of void draw and you put it inside the if statement of mouse pressed? How would that work? So now I've got a screen, nothing's on it. But if I click, now I'm drawing my green boxes and all of the different shapes all the different sizes. And if I stop, then it stops drawing. So now I've got a paint can. I've got a nozzle on my paint can. And it doesn't have to be a rectangle, of course. If you go to the reference page of processing, processing.org/reference, and look for those 2D primitives, there's an arc, an ellipse, line, point, quad, rectangle, triangle. So let's do ellipse and just see what happens. If we just replace rect with ellipse, ellipse, play, and now I click, and yeah, now I'm drawing with a rounded, you know, different sizes, because I've still got the randomness on the constraints of the circle, or of the ellipse more precisely. But now it's a little bit, I guess, more spray painty, I guess, because it's round and not square. That's what we're normal, that's what we're used to seeing, I think, when we think of painting. But yeah, I mean, the possibilities are endless, and this is just a 12 line application. So, well, we're up to 13 lines right now. Oh no, we're not. I forgot to delete that. Now we're up to 12 lines of code. That's it. Now, like I say, if you also install an Android developer kit, then in processing you can add Android export as a function to the one of the drop-down menus and export the thing as an APK that you can put on your phone. And if you have no use case for that, then you can still at least export the application. So if I save this sketch, which I'm not going to, but if I did, I could save the sketch and then I could export the application as a standalone Java application. And that means that your students or yourself, you can take your application to a friend's computer, and as long as they have Java installed, and a lot of people do, as long as they have that installed, they are able to launch and run your little application, because it's all in the little jar file, and it just runs everywhere. So it's a great tool. It's a fantastic way, I think, to get into mobile programming, if that's the direction you're headed. It's really useful for that. You can, I mean, it's a subset of Java, so you can hook other things into into this. So, I mean, you could have a database backend behind your application. You can do games. You can do all kinds of cool things with processing. It's definitely worth checking out. And it's also just, as I've demonstrated, a highly visual feedback kind of way of teaching anyone of any age, from any experience with computers, a lot of the basic concepts behind programming, how, for instance, an if condition works. Why doesn't it happen here? Well, because the mouse wasn't pressed. Loops and structure and syntax, what an argument is, all those kinds of things. It's a great teaching tool, and it's a great learning tool, and I highly, highly recommend it. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.